thank you so much for taking your time out to call us.
No worries.
So a kick off, obviously none of this would be possible without our having been at the Street Child United dinner the other night.
Yeah.
Fantastic evening. Did you enjoy yourself there?
Had a brilliant time. It was, it was one of the best evenings that I've ever hosted in terms of the energy in the room, the people that were involved, the people that I've worked with, the people who were bidding for auction items, just everyone who spoke as well. They spoke so well. I was really blown away, not only by Gilberto Silva, who is obviously such a huge global ambassador for Street Child United, and Alex Scott, who's brilliant too, but the two girls from Team England Girls, who just came up completely impromptu and said that they wanted to say a few words. That was the bit that really hit home with me. So yeah, it's quite an emotional evening. I think, I went away sort of buzzing on it, but with lots to think about. And it was such a great night, and an awesome venue as well. With the Woolwich Suite at the Emirates. So, yeah, brilliant. And I think a lot of money was raised, which was the
yeah,
key thing.
Obviously great. Obviously, being from Colombia, you've got that kind of link to the Street Child, franchise. When did you get involved? What kind of drew you in?
Well, it was interesting. It was one of the trustees who got in touch with me to ask if I would mind hosting. And I hadn't previously really been in touch. I've been aware of them, and I've heard of Street Child, and heard about the Street Child World Cup. I think that's got a fair bit of traction in the last year off the back of Brazil. So I thought, well, this would make a lot of sense. And then, as you say, the Colombian link is an interesting one. There's a fair bit of focus on Brazil, on South America as a whole at the moment. And as I mentioned in my sort of opening address, as my opening link, that I'd heard this incredible stat that Colombia is the fifth most unequal country in the world, and that's to do with the gap between rich and poor. There's only four other countries in the world where the gap is bigger between rich and poor, and then comes Colombia. And as I say, it got me thinking about who's affected by that, who's hit the hardest, who's really at the sharp end, and who really is the most vulnerable, and it is young people. So the whole project really resonated with me, and as a result, it was a real privilege and a real honour to host it. So of course I replied and said, yes, absolutely, let's do it.
We did a great job, Seth.
Oh, that's very kind, thank you. Well, it's a lot to do with the crowd in the room. I mean, they made it very easy for me. There was a lot of energy right from the start, and I think when they're on board with you, then you just go with it, and the evening just seemed to fly by.
Moving back in time a little, you yourself started out on student radio over at Oxford University. How did you enjoy that?
It was one of the best things that has ever happened because, I'm sure you guys would say the same. It's a lot of fun. You've got a lot of freedom. And I remember the first time I was on air, I went for my interview, and when you're going through interview, often there's some second years that stick around over the course of that time, just after term end, to chaperone a little bit and make sure everyone's okay. And the guy who was doing that for me is a guy called Barry. And I can't remember what his surname is, but I just remember him as Barry. And Barry said, if you get in, you should come and do this thing. It's called Oxygen FM. And I was like, oh, right, what's that? He said, yeah, student radio station. Just look us up in Precious Fair. And I said, all right. And so, ended up getting in, and I went to Precious Fair, and I tracked them down. And they said, well, what do you like doing? I was like, well, quite into sport, a bunch of stuff, but sport's my main passion. They said, all right, come in on Saturday afternoon, we've got a sports program called Touchline, and we'll get you involved. And I didn't realize that first time I'd go into the radio station I would actually be chucked on air, but in a way I had less time to worry about it, and suddenly I was sort of trying to write a script, and it must have probably been one of the worst scripts I've ever written. It was the first one, but yeah, I just got straight involved. And that first moment when I was on air, there was something very vivid about that memory for me that made me think, this is something quite unusual, this is something really special, and I like this feeling a lot. And so I just kept reinforcing it and going back and back and back, and it became such a key thing in my uni years. I don't think I had the most representative uni experience. I'm sure there are plenty of other people who spent more time down the college bar or out socializing than me. I was at the radio station, and it just I just kept following that passion, and I suppose that's ultimately what's led to where I am now. But that was when the seed was sown, and it was such a powerful feeling. I mean, I don't know if you guys get the same. I hope you do.
It's
a brilliant thing to be involved with. I really absolutely loved it.
So the sports side was something you always were interested in from an early age.
Yeah, I mean, as a football fan and generally sort of into sports, I've always loved my tennis, Formula One, and cricket, those things. You know, I always had a real passion for it, and, you know, how lucky am I? I get paid to talk out loud about things that I love.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very fortunate position to be in. So yes, I always thought that sport would be the most likely thing, you know, once I got into media. There was a case, you know, when I was involved in student radio, I started doing music presenting as well. As I say, you kind of do everything, you've got a lot of freedom. But I didn't think I could be the next Chris Moyles or the next Christian O'Connell or, you know, whoever you want to pick as your sort of radio icon, because I didn't think I necessarily had the skill set that would take me that far. And I sort of reached a crossroads where I had to say, well, do I want to go into music presenting or do I want to go into sport? And I think I picked right. Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's always been, you know, the thing that dominated my Saturday afternoons, that, you know, I would end up chatting about with my mates. So it's a real thrill to be able to do it, you know, full time as a broadcaster.
Going back to you as the music presenter, we were looking into some of the choices of artists that you had, and we've seen quite a few which we enjoy ourselves and which we played quite a bit. So we've seen Craig David, Artful Dodger, that sort of thing,
right,
going.
Okay.
What have you seen of?
Do you know what though? I mean, I was DJing and presenting around that time when UK Garage and Two Step was quite big. It was a very brief moment though. I mean, in terms of like the whole, you know, history of music, I think this is a genre which will barely be mentioned in years to come, because, you know, it's very niche, isn't it? And, you know, it's something that, you know, I really enjoyed. I actually really got into it. And I went to a wedding recently, and they had DJ Pied Piper there.
That's
and
amazing.
I was just like, oh my God, this is immense. This is brilliant. And, you know, it was just a real throwback. It's funny, actually, when you kind of talk about people like MJ Cole, Artful Dodger, Craig David, you know, where are they now? But, you know, it was really fun. I mean, like, you know, I really enjoyed that kind of music, and I still do. And, you know, there are certain radio stations that I listen to because of that. It's great. I mean, you know, the music presenting didn't go far, but whilst it lasted, I really enjoyed it.
Well, Craig David's just announced he's doing a comeback album, isn't he? So,
is he?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to buy that straight away. Done.
Yeah, he said he's started work on that.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear that he hasn't completely faded away.
Yeah. Yeah, we do our best to... We've been doing our best to bring that kind of music into our show a bit.
Yeah, so. The first show that we had was pretty much based around the UK garage scene.
Entirely, so that was good fun. Is that show available?
We're putting it up online somewhere? Over Christmas.
It is, yeah.
Excellent.
I'll send you a link to that as soon as that's up, yeah.
Send me a link. I'll stick it on the iPod. Done.
Brilliant. So obviously, once you finished up at uni with the radio, you know, where was your next step there, and where did you kind of go towards becoming where you are now?
It's a bit of a funny one, because basically I did the student radio, and then I kept doing it, and eventually I started freelancing around other bits of mainly commercial radio, and then something happened in 2000, which was and I'll try and give you the sort of, I suppose, potted version of this story, the abridged version rather than the full long one. But my parents, my mum in particular, saw in WH Smith and other stations are also available, there was this campaign called BBC Talent, and there was this little brochure on this stand, and she grabbed one for me. She said, well, you like your sort of radio stuff, why don't you have a look at this? And I had a little flick through, and I said, well, mum, it's mainly telly. I mean, I'm doing radio. I mean, I was probably quite naive at the time not to sort of, you know, think a bit broader. But in any case, she convinced me to go to an audition. And basically, the campaign was like, I suppose, what X Factor is now, but a much, 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 much poorer man's version of it. And for broadcasters. So it was trying to find, you know, TV presenters for things like sport, news, children's telly, other content areas. And also not just telly, but, you know, radio. There was like Radio 1 producer jobs and things like that. And it was the first year that the BBC had launched this campaign called Music Talent. It was back in 2000. So, you know, this was quite some time ago. And basically what happened was I went in, I did a regional audition in Birmingham. I didn't hear for a couple of months, and I got a phone call to say, oh, you remember that audition you did? Well, you're through to the semi-finals. And I was like, oh, right, okay. So then I went and went to TVC or Television Centre, and did some more stuff there. So it was like auto cue reading, doing some interviews myself, being interviewed by someone, lots of different scenarios. And then again, didn't hear for 2 months. And then they said, right, you're through to the final. And so having started with 1,500 people in this category for sport, we were down to 3. Now, I don't know about you, but I would much rather win a game 5-4 in the last minute than, you know, a comfortable 3-0 victory. The satisfaction of that is amazing. However, if you lose 5-4 in the last minute, the fact you scored 4 goals means nothing.
Yeah.
So I could have got to the last 3 and then lost at that point. I would have been livid. I would have been so frustrated. I would have been, oh my God, I've got so close.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we sort of went through the final. And essentially, they had already decided who'd won. It was more sort of for the sort of the award ceremony, if you like, and to have 3 finalists there. And then they announced the name of the winner. And so that basically meant that I won the campaign, and the prize was a contract with BBC Sport. Now, remember, I was 20 at this age, so I was at university still. So I had this contract waiting for me for when I finished, because they said, well, we'll defer it till you finish. We don't want to sort of interfere with your education, which I was really, really grateful for. So I worked with them that summer, and then I did my finals, and that was tough because of my final year. Obviously, my eyes and my attention was drawn towards working for BBC Sport when I finished, but I had to kind of knuckle down. And, you know, I was already presenting on TV for them. I was doing what's now BBC News, or the BBC News Channel, was back then BBC News 24. And I was presenting sport bulletins, and this is all in my final year. And I had to kind of scale it back in the last few months to make sure that I knuckled down and I, you know, read all my French texts, and I, you know, made sure I, you know, my German grammar was as good as it could be. You know, got the hat, got the scroll, got out of there, and then joined the BBC, and that was the next step. Really, was joining BBC Sport. That was my first major job with the BBC in London, and I was again really fortunate because, you know, a lot of people when they leave uni, they haven't necessarily got sorted out where they're going to go next.
Yeah.
And my BBC talent experience was a real springboard to take me to that next phase, really.
So obviously after Radio 1, you moved on to what most people would know you now for on Sky Sports News. Would you say you preferred working at the radio or being on screen, which are obviously very different?
Yeah, do you know what? It's really hard to say because I love radio. It's a beautiful medium. It's so intimate. It's so unique. It's so powerful. I mean, when I was... just to give you a little sort of scenario, little story. When I was... at Silverstone in 2008 for the British Grand Prix, and I saw Lewis Hamilton win, you know, by a country mile in the wet, and he drove brilliantly. It's the one day in my life when I wanted to clone myself because I wanted to be at Wimbledon as well to watch Federer and Nadal 9-7 in the fifth, and one of the best finals ever played. However, my job meant that I spent the first week and a half at Wimbledon, and then I had to jump out to go to Silverstone. Oh God, what a drag! You're probably there thinking, but it was. I love my tennis too, and you know, I thought, oh God, well, I'm going to have to watch this from here. So I was sat at Silverstone, stayed around, watched it on a big screen there, watched the fourth set when Federer levelled it up at 2-0, and then I drove home to get home, thinking, well, if this isn't finished tonight, I'm going to need to be there in the morning. So I drove home and I listened to the fifth set on the radio, and it was one of the most powerful things that I've ever heard. It was brilliantly done. And, you know, I think that radio has got this incredible sort of ethereal quality. It's just something, you know, very specific to the medium where you can paint pictures. And the picture you paint for your audience relies on the words that you use, the skills you have as a broadcaster. Whereas, of course, with telly, well, most of the pictures do the talking, yeah. and you have to complement that. So they're very different skills. For me personally, I needed that next step in my career. And I felt that having started in TV, having spent a long time in radio, it would be nice to go back to TV and push it that way, you know, as the next kind of major direction. And I mean, as it turned out, unfortunately, I mean, I was at the BBC at the time. I wanted at the time to stay there, but it was a kind of complicated situation with the BBC obviously being paid for by the license fee, but they were under real pressure to kind of bring down the budgets and make some savings, as they have been for quite some time now. And so it was only really by luck that I found out about Sky. And I remember getting a one-line email saying, David, what's your number? Can I call you? Now, sounds a bit weird. And also my office was sort of famous for people playing tricks on each other and like being like pranksters and stuff. So the first thing I did was look around the office to see if anyone was like smirking at me or anyone, you know, just, you know, some sort of reaction. But everyone was locked in with their headphones, you know, doing their own thing. So I thought, oh, this may be legit. So, you know, I replied and I said, yeah, this is my number. Feel free to give me a call at this time. We spoke and they said, well, look, we're aware of what you're doing. We're sort of catching our net further and wider. And we'd like to invite you in for a screen test. So I went and did it. And I mean, it's funny because I didn't think the screen test went that well, but it seemed to be okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one thing led to another and I ended up, you know, agreeing a contract with them, resigning from the BBC and joining them in, what was it, February of 2011. So, you know, I think it was the necessary step for me. I needed to find something new. Originally, I didn't know if that was going to be at the BBC. I thought it probably would be. But then, you know, once the biggest broadcaster in sport in the UK, you know, shows a bit of interest and you go and show what you can do, then obviously, you know, it was an absolute no-brainer for me. You know, I kind of started thinking about where I could go, what I could give this new broadcaster, and you know, it was, you know, again a really important decision that I made, and I'm so glad that I did it. So, you know, it's been what now 4.5 years, and it's absolutely flown by. And I think, yeah, it was absolutely the right decision at the right time for me.
Wonderful. Jumping back a little bit to when you were talking, say, at Silverstone, then to Wimbledon and this sort of thing, travel must be a huge part of your career. Is it something you enjoy or just something you have to do?
No, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. It's one of the best things. I mean, you know, I want to try and see as much of this planet as I can. And if your job can take you there, then even better. Whenever I used to travel with my job, and I still do from time to time, I filmed a documentary last year on the Gibraltar national football team, which also got me travelling a bit, and so that sort of, you know, fed that sort of bug, if you like, that you know, the travel bug. But I always used to try and stick around for a bit longer. I covered the World Cup in South Africa in 2010, and even though England went out in the second round, I stayed out there till the final. I was working for Radio 1, I was working for other BBC networks, doing some sort of online stuff too, and then after that I stuck around for another month, because I sort of put my holiday onto the back of that trip and then just went traveling around South Africa. And, you know, I sound like a broken record here, but I have been so lucky to be able to do that, you know, to travel around South Africa, to go to the Kruger National Park, to get out of Durban, you know, plant one foot into Lesotho and head to Swaziland as well. You know, that's amazing, amazing stuff that I could never have dreamed of. So, yeah, whenever I got the opportunity... I was very lucky that Radio 1, for example, sent me to Australia a few times and Russia as well as South Africa. And with Sky in 2012, when we got the F1 rights deal, they wanted some presentation as well as the reporters for Sky Sports News. And I went and did that alongside the guys from the F1 channel. So there was kind of quite a sort of a big army of us that headed over to Melbourne for the first Grand Prix of the season. And because I knew my F1, they wanted to send me as an extra presenter. So I went and did that. So again, on that occasion, I then sort of, you know, took some time out afterwards and did a bit of travelling. I think, you know, it is one of the greatest things, you know, you can do in life is go and experience other cultures, other people, hear other languages and find out about the world. And it's my next big passion, if you like, alongside sport is travel. So to be able to marry the two is just perfect.
Yeah, brilliant. Based on this love of travel, can we now play a quick game with you?
Oh, okay. Go on then. Yeah.
Can we take you on our Sky Sports cruise?
Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll take you on our Sky Sports cruise around the world.
Right.
Okay. And we'll stop at different countries, different cities around the world, and we'll just ask you a question based on that city or that country, and you just...
Is this general knowledge?
Yes, but I wouldn't say it's...
Right, I'm gonna get my excuses in early. I know that I'm not going to cover myself in glory here, so
okay, don't worry.
Let's see how we go, but don't have too high expectations, please.
Okay, well, the first stop of the... the Sky Sports cruise starts at Southampton, so first question is about Southampton.
Right.
This is a true or false question. Clarence Birdseye, now known as Captain Birdseye, used the people of Southampton to test his herring sticks and cod sticks that are now known as fish fingers. So he used the people of Southampton to test whether or not his fish fingers were any good. True or false?
So a whole city were basically the guinea pigs for one of the best known products that we have.
I guess so, yeah.
Right. I'm gonna go true. I reckon that's absolutely spot on, is it?
It is indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
thank the people of Southampton for the lovely fish fingers.
Okay,
that's
it. I'm done now. I've got the cruise. I'm happy.
Well, moving from Southampton, of course, the cruise has to go elsewhere, so we're heading to New York now for another true or false question. Central Park is larger than Monaco. True or false?
Ooh. Well, I have been to Monaco, luckily, and it's tiny. It really is tiny. And I've been to Central Park, but I didn't explore all of it.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to say true.
It is true.
Yeah!
Two out of two. That's fantastic.
I am absolutely fluking this, by the way.
From New York, we'll travel down to South America and Brazil, where is, of course, the host of next summer's Olympics and, of course, the Street Child Games. So,
yeah.
The question in Brazil, not a true or false question. How tall is Christ the Redeemer? And we'll give you 2 meters each way.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know what? You've managed to expose a real weakness here. You know, I'll come up with something ridiculous. I'll say, like, 10 meters or something like that. But I'm just trying to... I don't know if you remember, Taylor, in particular, at the event on Thursday, they had that incredible shot of all the guys and girls who are involved
holding
in the Street
the flag,
Child World Cup beneath Christ Redeemer. And I was told they had that place for themselves for 2 hours. I was like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
But and everyone looked like ants. They looked so tiny.
Yeah.
As that, you know, as the camera just panned away and you could see the whole thing. I mean, let me have a think about this. Just trying to think roughly how big those kind of things are, because it does look quite imposing, doesn't it? I mean, I'm gonna I've honestly got no idea. I'm gonna say, so I've got 2 meters either way, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say 75 meters.
Just a little out. Pretty much half, 38 metres.
Oh!
Yeah, not quite as big as you think.
Because I was going to go low, but I thought that would be just a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's only 20 metres. Like, no, come on, David. It's quite as in Redeemer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So not 75 then, fine.
Unfortunately not. That's still too correct.
So right. I think we're doing quite well as we head off to South Africa. Once again, a true or false question here.
Okay.
Is South Africa the largest producer of almonds? So, true or false, South Africa is the largest producer of almonds.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but almonds is actually one of my favourite hobbies in life. Like, I absolutely love... I don't really. I have absolutely no clue about almonds. I'm going to go false.
That is correct. Again, it is false. It's the largest producer of macadamia nuts, in fact.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I knew it was the other one. Obviously. I mean, if it's not going to be almonds, it's going to be macadamia, right? I mean,
it's the classic conundrum. So, from South Africa, we move up to our final destination on the Sky Sports cruise, Singapore.
Right.
And again, another true-false question. Is Singapore home to the Guinness World Record holder for smashing the most finals?
Smashing the most finals?
Yeah.
What a brilliant record that is to have, by the way.
In, I think it's a minute.
30 seconds.
30 seconds.
What, trying to smash the most in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
How many? Do you know how many they did?
38.
So that's more than one a second?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'd love to have a record like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say true.
Correct again.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go. That's not too disrespectful. I mean, you know, I think, you know, 4 out of 5 is okay. I'm quite happy with that.
You can happily disembark from the Sky Sports cruise knowing you've had
a
good
adventure. I want to stay on.
Well, we'll give you a prize for 4 out of 5 on the Sky Sports cruise of a song request of your choice.
Right, okay. And is it absolutely anything?
Pretty much.
Okay, right. Well, I'm going to have to go UK and Garage, obviously.
Fantastic.
I mean,
Thank you.
It would be remiss not to.
Yeah.
Right, I'm gonna go for, and I'm tired, John. I'm trying to remember the artist. I've got a feeling it was Artful Dodger. Anyway, it's called "Please Don't Turn Me On."
Okay. Yep. We will be sure to find that.
Yeah. Make sure you. If you don't, then if it doesn't work. No. Listen. I'm anything UK garage. I'm totally fine with that. It's very much a genre I have a lot of fondness for. It's very niche. Some people absolutely hate it, but lots of fond memories for me in student radio because of it. So, you go for your life, whatever you like.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking your time out to talk to us, David. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been wonderful.
Anytime. And the Sky Sports Cruise idea, brilliant. I want you to run with that and make it a weekly feature. I think it's brilliant. Absolutely love it.
Brilliant. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
Speak to you soon.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.